Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now in the studio is Damas, who is a medical doctor. She is from the Alawite community in Syria. She's escaped with her life. We cannot reveal her true name and show her picture on our website, ianmasters.com, because her family would be murdered by the regime. So with that said, welcome to Background Briefing, Damas.
Thank you.
And tell me, you grew up in a country that's been ruled by one family for as long as you know, right?
Yeah, for more than 40 years.
Right. So the streets, everywhere you go, there are pictures of...
And sculptures for them also.
Right. So this is a combination of a mafia family and Stalinist rule. That seems to be... The way it is.
Yeah, that's right.
The cult of personality.
Yeah.
Secret police.
Yeah. And
controlling the country.
Yeah. And idealizing of one person.
Right. And his family, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about then, for example, what would happen to your family if the Muhabarat, the secret police, found out that you would...
As I'm here now in the U.S., they can't really get me anymore. So they for sure will go for my family. They will punish me through my family. They will arrest my father and mom and maybe my sisters also. They will torture them for sure. Then they may release them and they may keep them as kind of pressure on me to reveal my name. And... Actually, that's really common in Syria. There's that Syrian famous musician. His name is Malik Jandali. He lives here in the U.S. And he was one of the first people who expressed his opinion that he's against Assad when the revolution started back in 2011. And they went for his parents, and they are in their 80s. And, you know, they are really old, and they arrested them and tortured them. And that also happened to one of my cousins. She lives also here, and they went for her brother.
So when the revolution started 33 months ago, I understand that you and your fellow doctors and medical students treated the wounded that were shot down by the regime just for taking to the streets. What happened to some of your friends in... the prisons? There are about 300,000 people, as far as we know, in Assad's prisons.
Yeah, and the actual number is much bigger than that.
Right. So tell me what happened to your friends when they were arrested.
They arrested back when in March 2011, after the revolution started. They arrested the three of my close friends. And for sure, they arrested them from the university. It's a way to humiliate them in front of everybody. And after arresting them, for sure, they were hitting them when they were on their way to the prison. And when they were in the same prison, they couldn't even recognize themselves. They recognized each other by voice because their face bones were really broken. And one of my friends, his name is Muhammad, he's still there. They took off his skin, they injected him with diseases. He refused to reveal which is, if it's hepatitis or AIDS, but they did really horrible things.
So in other words, the prison, Assad's prison doctors inject prisoners with either AIDS or hepatitis?
Yeah, yeah. They inject them with diseases and they took them to special... hospitals that's related to this prison that they can, you know, inject them with diseases and torture them there, even in hospitals.
So that they can use medical treatment to keep them alive and conscious so they can inflict more pain.
Yeah.
But on the way out, when they discharge them from prison,
Muhammad
they have a terminal disease.
Yeah,
Muhammad, either AIDS or hepatitis.
Yeah, Muhammad, my friend who was injected with one of these diseases, he said when he was in prison, he was really tortured and he was so desperate. Then they took him to the hospital and he was happy about that because he thought that he would have a break of torturing. And he said that was even worse than staying in the prison.
So it's very clear, Damas, that the U.S. and the West have been reluctant to come to the rescue of Syrians who've tried to get rid of this family dictatorship and, you know, have stood in the streets and been shot at by the regime because they want freedom and democracy.
Yeah.
How does this make you feel that, because there's an article in Sunday's New York Times by Ryan Crocker, who served as a U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, yeah. Kuwait, Lebanon, etc. He was the dean of the Bush School of Government, former Bush administration State Department official. He's basically now arguing in the New York Times that Assad is the least worst option for the yeah. Americans, and that they're basically, you know, that Obama should never have said in 2011 that Assad must go. Hillary Clinton said he was going to fall. And he's arguing if you say somebody's going to fall, you have to actually do it. You can't just say that they're going to fall. You have to make them fall or drive them out of office or whatever. So now he's basically saying because we underestimated Assad, now we have to accept the fact that he's there and deal with him. So yeah. How does that make you feel?
That's for sure frustrating. But to be honest, that doesn't really surprise me. It has been now almost 2 years and a half, and people are arrested by Assad regime every day. They are tortured, killed. Horrible things are, you know, it's just the horrible situation in Syria. And he's using chemical weapons, and that doesn't really surprise me because there is no coverage on that. They don't really care about that. There was only one coverage for one chemical massacre, which was back in Damascus in August, in Ghouta. And it was the third time to use chemical weapons, and there was no coverage for that. So it doesn't really surprise me, but for sure I'm frustrated and disappointed.
But how does, and again, let me just remind the audience, I'm speaking with Damas, who is a medical doctor. She comes from the Alawite community in Syria. She's escaped with her life, and we cannot reveal her identity nor show her picture. But at this point, how does, or assuming that the U.S. doesn't sell out the rebellion, which it sounds like yeah. it will, assuming that they don't, what can the U.S. and the West do? Because, you know, how do you support the freedom fighters without supporting the jihadis, the al-Nusra people?
Yeah, the thing is, since the revolution started, we didn't see any actual movement to support these fighters, freedom fighters. And when you ask me about how we should support them, I just want to know what do you mean exactly by this. But if you mean politically or, you know, to introduce them here to the U.S., at least there's no real coverage in media about these freedom fighters. They present our revolution in the U.S. as it's our Islamic movement, and people who are leading this revolution are radical Islamic groups, which is not true. And at least, you know, to support them, present their real image to the world. They are well-educated people. They are young people who are fighting for their freedom. They are not radical Islamic people.
So, but the head of al-Nusra had a press conference just a few days ago and said that they're going to make an Islamic State in Syria and introduce Sharia law, etc.
Yeah, but the thing is that these people doesn't really represent the rebels.
Right.
It's the way.
Are they Syrian? There are a lot of foreign fighters. I mean, are there Syrians in this radical Islamic?
There is
groups?
Many of them. Yes, they are Syrian, but they don't represent the rebels, and we don't favor a dictator over one. We are not fighting against Assad to start this another dictatorship, you know, state. It's they are, yeah, many of them are Syrian, but the thing is, there is a famous journalist in Syria. His name is Arif Hamzi, and he's from Raqqa, and he was really involved with the rebels and in this revolution. And he documented what's happening now in Raqqa, as it's a free city, and the Qaeda now is in charge of everything. He documented like how many people are arresting, you know, from the rebels, how they are torturing them. It's the same, it's just the same system, just a different name. They are not the rebels. They don't represent our revolution. And unfortunately, there is no English translation for this documentations, but this Qaeda and Raqqa, they arrested so far, almost in 1 year, 2,000 people of the rebels, and they are torturing them.
Mm-hmm. And this is the group that the Saudis, Arabians, and the Qataris are supporting.
They pay them money, and they give them weapons. They are really well organized, and they have their supplies. Mm-hmm. They are really in power.
And they just actually captured some Free Syrian Army warehouses on the Turkish border.
Yeah.
And that's led the British and the Americans to cut off aid to the Free Syrian Army. So, but on the other side, why do people support the Assad? So it's clear that that he has some support.
Yeah.
Although I understand from the Alawite community, which that there's a split in the Alawite community. Some of the Alawites actually favor his uncle, who's in exile in London.
Yeah, Rafat Assad, right. Yeah.
But tell me why it is that, why do people, and I believe the Christian community, supports Assad? That's what we're told.
Well, first of all, Christian community doesn't support Assad at all. There is that famous journalist, his name Basil Shahadi. He's a Christian from Homs. He was here in the U.S. when the revolution started. He got a scholarship to study here in the U.S., which is really hard to, you know, to, as he's Syrian, it's really hard to get this scholarship here. And he just quitted his program and went back to Syria just to document what's happening, and they killed him for sure. The Christian community doesn't support Assad, but it's the way that the media wants to present that to people. The Assad supporters, there is no like religion for them. There is no, you can't really just stereotype them. They are not like Alawite or Christian. They are just supporters. Many of them, they have financial interest with Assad regime. They have their investments. They are getting really good money from supporting Assad. And there is another kind of people who support Assad not because of financial interest. And these people, yeah, the majority of them are Alawite, and they are from my hometown city. Because I've been there in these villages, and I met people who are fighting for Assad. I wanted to listen to their stories and just to understand why they are supporting him. And you find out that there is kind of a brainwashing to them. It's like, you are Alawite. If Assad, you know, goes, all Sunni people will slaughter you and your families. There is this kind of a brainwashing. They are not happy that they're children are going to this war and they are killed, you know. They are not happy about that, but they feel that they are in a threatened and they need to defend themselves. They need to survive. It's kind of a brainwashing, and they are really very poor people, very poor, simple people. Most of them are farmers. Mm-hmm. They are not even well trained to be soldiers. I know one of these soldiers who went to fight for Assad on Monday. By Wednesday, he was dead. Mm-hmm. He was killed because he was not trained at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people say though that it's, and I've talked to a lot of analysts who say that it's a standoff, that this war could go on for a decade. That as long as the foreign fighters come in, and as long as Iran and Hezbollah support Assad, they will be able to just continually feed young men into the battlefield.
Yeah.
And that they will, the agony will go on. So what's your sense now that you've escaped your country and you were able to get through roadblocks because you have an Alawite identification? What is your sense of how this will end, when this will end, will this end?
Yeah, I don't expect that will end soon at all. I don't really expect that Assad will go, or I don't even expect that the Nusra, as it's the strongest part, you know, against Assad. And I don't really expect that Nusra will win. The thing is, there is like also international trend to support both Assad regime and like this radical Islamic groups in equal way, that they will keep fighting and fighting, and none of them will win. There is also there's this famous journalist, he's Syrian. He was arrested by Hafez, Bashar's Assad father. He was arrested and exiled out of Syria. His name is Salami Kaili. He wrote about that, and he documented the way that Saudi is supporting, you know, this radical Islamic group, this Sunni Islamic groups, and how Iran and Hezbollah are supporting these Alawite and Shia groups who are fighting for Assad. And they are supported just in an equal way. Mm-hmm. Just to keep them fighting.
I see.
No one will win.
So that's the cynical interpretation. What about, though, just in the last couple of minutes, you're saying that the press, the American press, are not covering it properly.
No.
Is that because, do you think that America basically sold out Syria?
Yeah.
Hillary and Clinton, yeah, and Obama said Assad, yeah, was going to fall, and then they did nothing about it.
Yeah.
And now they're pulling away. They're trying to make a deal with the Iranians.
Yeah.
They're going to sell out the rebellion. I think it's pretty clear. So are they just basically, is our press going along with the idea that maybe Assad is the best option, as Ryan Crocker suggested?
For sure, he's not the best option, at least for us. The thing is how we feel like Assyrian people toward this American politics, and the way that they, you know, react to our revolution. We are really frustrated. And even when they made this crisis and big deal about the American strike after the chemical massacre, and they did not go for it, we were really frustrated. We don't really trust the American system, and we don't really believe that they will help us just because, you know, for humanity and their belief in freedom. We don't believe in that at all. But we believe that they have, like, interest in the Middle East, and they have, like, investments in Syria and in Saudi Arabia and Iran. Is it just about their interest and investments? We don't really believe that they will help us because we are fighting for our freedom. This revolution now, like, it has been like for more than 2.5 years, and there is no real support to this revolution. No real support, as I mean, politically or financially. Even sending supplies for people, like food or medications, they don't even care about doing that, you know. So I don't really think that they will ever support us.
Well, Damas, I thank you very much for joining us here today in the studio.
Thank you.
And you're a very brave woman, and I appreciate your coming in here to speak with us.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Damas, who is from the Alawite community in Syria. She's a medical doctor. She managed to escape from Syria, largely because of her identity papers being an Alawite, part of the regime, if you will, and was able to come here to the United States, and we're very grateful.
This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.